Chapter 157. Among them, and as if the lunacy of Mr. Tapley were contagious, he immediately began to shake hands too, and exhibit every demonstration of the liveliest joy. "Get up, behind!" he said. "Get up in the rumble. Come along with me. Go you on the box, Mark. Home. 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 Cried Mr. Tapley, seizing the old man's hand in a burst of enthusiasm. "Exactly my opinion, sir. Home forever. Excuse the liberty, sir, I can't help it. Success to the jolly Tapley. There's nothing in the house they shan't have for the asking for, except a bill. Home to be sure. Hurrah!" Home they rolled accordingly, when he had got the old man in again, as fast as they could go, Mark abating nothing of his fervor by the way, by allowing it to vent itself as unrestrainedly as if he had been on Salisbury Plain. And now the wedding party began to assemble at Todgers. Mr. Jenkins, the only boarder invited, was on the ground first. He wore a white favor in his buttonhole, and a brand new extra super double milled blue Saxony dress coat that was its description in the bill, with a variety of tortuous embellishments about the pockets, invented by the artist, to do honor to the day. The miserable Augustus no longer felt strongly even on the subject of Jenkins. He hadn't strength of mind enough to do it. "Let him come," he had said, in answer to Miss Pecksniff, when she urged the point. "Let him come. He has ever been my rock ahead through life. 'Tis me he should be there. Ha, ha. Oh, yes. Let Jenkins come." Jenkins had come with all the pleasure in life, and there he was. For some few minutes he had no companion but the breakfast, which was set forth in the drawing room, with unusual taste and ceremony. But Mrs. Todger soon joined him, and the bachelor cousin, the hairy young gentleman, and Mr. and Mrs. Spottletoe, arrived in quick succession. Mr. Spottletoe honored Jenkins with an encouraging bow. "Glad to know you, sir," he said. "Give you joy." Under the impression that Jenkins was the happy man. Mr. Jenkins explained. He was merely doing the honors for his friend Model, who had ceased to reside in the house, and had not yet arrived. "Not arrived, sir?" exclaimed Spottletoe, in a great heat. "Not yet," said Mr. Jenkins. "Upon my soul!" cried Spottletoe. "He begins well. Upon my life and honor, this young man begins well. But I should very much like to know how it is that everyone who comes into contact with this family is guilty of some gross insult to it. Death. Not arrived yet. Not here to receive us." The nephew with the outline of a countenance suggested that perhaps he had ordered a new pair of boots, and they hadn't come home. "Don't talk to me of boots, sir," retorted Spottletoe, with immense indignation. "He is bound to come here in his slippers then. He is bound to come here barefoot. Don't offer such a wretched and evasive plea to me on behalf of your friend, as boots, sir." "He is not my friend," said the nephew. "I never saw him." "Very well, sir," returned the fiery Spottletoe. "Then don't talk to me." The door was thrown open at this juncture, and Miss Pecksniff entered, tottering, and supported by her three bridesmaids. The strong-minded woman brought up the rear, having waited outside until now, for the purpose of spoiling the effect. "How do you do, ma'am?" said Spottletoe to the strong-minded woman in a tone of defiance. "I believe you see Mrs. Spottletoe, ma'am?" The strong-minded woman, with an air of great interest in Mrs. Spottletoe's health, regretted that she was not more easily seen. Nature erring, in that lady's case, upon the slim side. "Mrs. Spottletoe is at least more easily seen than the bridegroom, ma'am," returned that lady's husband. That is, unless he has confined his attentions to any particular part or branch of this family, which would be quite in keeping with its usual proceedings. Apostrophe, if you allude to me, sir, apostrophe, the strong-minded woman began. Pray, apostrophe, interposed Miss Pecksniff, do not allow Augustus, at this awful moment of his life and mine, to be the means of disturbing that harmony which it is ever Augustus's and my wish to maintain. Augustus has not been introduced to any of my relations now present. He preferred not. Apostrophe, why then, I venture to assert, apostrophe, cried Mr. Spottletoe, that the man who aspires to join this family, and prefers not to be introduced to its members, is an impertinent puppy. That is my opinion of him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the strong-minded woman remarked with great suavity that she was afraid he must be. Her three daughters observed aloud that it was shameful. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you do not know Augustus, apostrophe, said Miss Pecksniff, tearfully, indeed you do not know him. Augustus is all mildness and humility. Wait till you see Augustus, and I am sure he will conciliate your affections. Apostrophe, the question arises, apostrophe, said Spottletoe, folding his arms. How long we are to wait? I am not accustomed to wait, that's the fact. And I want to know how long we are expected to wait. Apostrophe, Mrs. Todgers. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Charity, Mr. Jenkins. I am afraid there must be some mistake. I think Augustus must have gone straight to the altar. Apostrophe, apostrophe, such a thing was possible, and the church was close at hand. Mr. Jenkins ran off to see, accompanied by Mr. George Chuzzle with the bachelor cousin, who preferred anything to the aggravation of sitting near the breakfast, without being able to eat it. But they came back with no other tidings than a familiar message from the clerk, importing that if they wanted to be married, that morning they had better look sharp, as the curate wasn't going to wait there all day. The bride was now alarmed, seriously alarmed. Good heavens, what could have happened? Augustus. Dear Augustus. Mr. Jenkins volunteered to take a cab and seek him at the newly furnished house. The strong-minded woman administered comfort to Miss Pecksniff. It was a specimen of what she had to expect. It would do her good. It would dispel the romance of the affair. Apostrophe, the red-nosed daughters also administered the kindest comfort. Perhaps he'd come, apostrophe, they said. The sketchy nephew hinted that he might have fallen off a bridge. The wrath of Mr. Spottletoe resisted all the entreaties of his wife. Everybody spoke at once, and Miss Pecksniff, with clasped hands, sought consolation everywhere, and found it nowhere, when Jenkins, having met the postman at the door, came back with a letter, which he put into her hand. Miss Pecksniff opened it, uttered a piercing shriek, threw it down upon the ground, and fainted away. They picked it up, and crowding round, and looking over one another's shoulders, read, in the words and dashes following, this communication. Off Gravesend. Clipper schooner, Cupid, Wednesday night, ever injured Miss Pecksniff, ere this reaches you, the undersigned will be if not a corpse on the way to Van Diemen's Land. Send not in pursuit. I never will be taken alive. The burden 300 tons per register forgive, if in my distraction, I allude to the ship on my mind, has been truly dreadful. Frequently when you have sought to soothe my brow with kisses, has self-destruction flashed across me. Frequently incredible as it may seem, have I abandoned the idea. I love another. She is another's. Everything appears to be somebody else's. Nothing in the world is mine, not even my situation which I have forfeited by my rash conduct in running away. If you ever loved me, hear my last appeal. The last appeal of a miserable and blighted exile. Forward the inclosed it is the key of my desk to the office by hand. Please address to Bobs and Cholberry, I mean to Chops and Bulberry, but my mind is totally unhinged. I left a penknife with a buckhorn handle in your workbox. It will repay the messenger. May it make him happier than ever it did me. Oh, Miss Pecksniff, why didn't he leave me alone? Was it not cruel, cruel? Oh, my goodness, have you not been a witness of my feelings? Have you not seen them flowing from my eyes? Did you not, yourself, reproach me with weeping more than usual on that dreadful night, when last we met in that house, where I once was peaceful, though blighted in the society of Mrs. Todgers? But it was written in the Talmud, that you should involve yourself in the inscrutable and gloomy fate which it is my mission to accomplish, and which rears itself and now about in temples. I will not reproach, for I have wronged you. May the furniture make some amends. Farewell. Be the proud bride of a ducal coronet, and forget me. Long may it be before you know the anguish with which I now subscribe myself amid the tempestuous howlings of the sailors. Unalterably, never yours, Augustus. Apostrophe, they thought as little of Miss Pecksniff, while they greedily perused this letter, as if she were the very last person on earth whom it concerned. But Miss Pecksniff really had fainted away. The bitterness of her mortification, the bitterness of having summoned witnesses, and such witnesses, to behold it, the bitterness of knowing that the strong-minded women and the red-nosed daughters towered triumphant in this hour of their anticipated overthrow, was too much to be borne. Miss Pecksniff had fainted away in earnest. What sounds are these that fall so grandly on the ear? What darkening room is this? And that mild figure seated at an organ, who is he? Ah, Tom, dear Tom, old friend! Thy head is prematurely gray, though time has passed thee, and our old association, Tom. But, in those sounds with which it is thy wont, to bear the twilight company, the music of thy heart, speaks out the story of thy life relates itself. Thy life is tranquil, calm, and happy, Tom. In the soft strain which ever and again comes stealing back upon the ear, the memory of thine old love may find a voice perhaps. But it is a pleasant, softened, whispering memory, like that in which we sometimes hold the dead, and does not pain or grieve thee, God be thanked. Touch the notes lightly, Tom, as lightly as thou wilt, but never will thine hand fall half so lightly on that instrument, as on the head of thine old tyrant brought down very, very low, and never will it make as hollow a response to any touch of thine, as he does always. For a drunken, begging, squalid, letter-writing man, called Pecksniff, with a shrewish daughter, haunts thee, Tom, and when he makes appeals to thee for cash, reminds thee that he built thy fortunes better than his own, and when he spends it, entertains the ill-house company with tales of thine ingratitude, and his munificence towards thee once upon a time. And then he shows his elbows worn in holes, and puts his soulless shoes upon a bench, and begs his auditors look there, while thou art comfortably housed and clothed. All known to thee, and yet all born with, Tom. So, with a smile upon thy face, thou passest gently to another measure to a quicker and more joyful one, and little feet are used to dance about thee at the sound, and bright young eyes to glance up into thine. And there is one slight creature, Tom or child, not Ruth's whom thine eyes follow in the romp and dance, who, wondering sometimes to see thee look so thoughtful, runs to climb upon thy knee, and put her cheek to thine, who loves thee, Tom, above the rest, if that can be, and falling sick once, chose thee for her nurse, and never knew impatience, Tom, when thou wert by her side. Thou glidest now into a graver air, an air devoted to old friends and bygone times, and in thy lingering touch upon the keys, and the rich swelling of the mellow harmony, they rise before thee. The spirit of that old man dead, who delighted to anticipate thy wants, and never ceased to honor thee, is there, among the rest, repeating, with a face composed and calm, the words he said to thee upon his bed, and blessing thee. And coming from a garden, Tom, bestrewn with flowers by children's hands, thy sister, little Ruth, as light of foot and heart as in old days, sits down beside thee. From the present, and the past, with which she is so tenderly entwined in all thy thoughts, thy strain soars onward to the future. As it resounds within thee and without, the noble music, rolling round thee both, shuts out the grosser prospect of an earthly parting, and uplifts ye both to heaven. End of the Project Gutenberg, a text of Martin Chuzzlewit by Dickens. Chuzz by Gutenberg Edition.